And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is GCaptain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of GCaptain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles, and back in the studio with me here on the West Coast, where we've got a view of the Pacific Ocean right now, is John Conrad. Welcome, John. Welcome back from the Big Apple. How are you doing?
I'm glad to be here.
And how did your travels go?
Well, it turned into a long trip. It was supposed to be a week in New York City, but things really happened fast there, and it turned into a four-week kind of business trip.
So you spent 4 weeks back there on the East Coast.
Yep.
And did you get a lot done?
I sure did.
Excellent. Well, good. You look a little weary, a little travel worn, but we'll get you back up to speed here.
I don't think the audience realized that, but thank you for pointing it out.
Well, that's the thing. I've always said, John, you do have a face for radio, so you're sitting in the right place.
I also have a voice for the written word, but...
Yes, you do. All right. Well, we've got you in the right place. This broadcast is for the week of September 2nd, 2013. And listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. Today, we've got several interesting things to discuss. First off, it's a whale of a story. There is a ship called A Whale, and the Libyan forces have posted something on YouTube about it. And it has to do with the rocket, and I believe it's a tanker or a skimmer. We're going to talk about that. Also, the Costa Concordia salvage operation is progressing, so we'll get an update with regard to that. And then lastly, there is something going on in the world of piracy. Piracy is something that is always of concern to those of us on the water, and really a worldwide concern. So we'll hit on the piracy issue as well. But let's start off with, and I just can't help doing this, John, with the whale of a story.
I was going to say you warned me against about the bad jokes you're going to tell, but you didn't warn the audience.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, they're going to get the full brunt of my bad jokes today. So let's talk about the whale. It's actually a ship called the Whale, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what's going on there?
There's A Whale, there's B Whale, there's C Whale. It's the company that owns these vessels decided to name them after letters of the alphabet, followed by Whale. Well, this ship was built fairly recently in 2010, Hyundai Heavy Industries.
2010, so very recently. Nice, shiny new ship then.
And it made headlines for its massive failed attempt as a oil skimmer following the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. So after being built in Hyundai Heavy Industries, the owners of this vessel, TMT Company, who are known for kind of doing things that, for taking risks no one else is willing to do. They, one of the companies that frequently goes into Iran and places where other companies won't go into, and willing to take interesting projects. Well, they took this enormous brand new vessel, they sent it to Portugal and proceeded to cut 6 large holes in the waterline of this tanker. Now, the idea was to use it as an oil skimmer. So after cutting these enormous holes in this tanker, they brought it to the Gulf of Mexico, where they attempted to skim the oil off of the water, the oil that was being spilled from the Macondo well during that incident. Mm-hmm. This vessel was sucking 500,000 barrels a day through these 6 ports cut in the hull.
Wow.
And this is a huge vessel in itself. It's 1,115 feet long. So an enormous oil tanker that they tried to use as a skimmer. Well, it completely failed. They did very little. The oil just spreads out too much. So when you drop oil into the water, you'll see it rapidly expand.
Sure, yeah.
What happens is it gets down to the very molecular level. So one molecule will just cover the water, and that's why it expands so much. So the volume of oil in any one, like say, square foot of area in the water isn't very much, and that's the reason that the A Whale failed as an oil skimmer. But
and to be clear on this, so the skimmer apparatus, the cutting into the hull and all this, so that was a retrofit to that ship. It wasn't designed specifically.
Retrofit to a brand new ship, yes.
Yeah, that's which I find curious. I mean, a ship
very
that
unusual.
New, built in 2010, and they go in and start cutting holes into the hull. That doesn't seem
ordinary. And you're not the first to joke about this, because when, about the name specifically, because right when that was announced, the A Whale did go and it started performing this, and it was headline news, all the major papers, and CNN featured the vessel and Fox News, and it was a big media splash when it first attempted. And obviously the owners were very optimistic when they first brought it into the Gulf of Mexico, but it was a failure. And then this week it made headlines again, and we don't have specific details on why it was there or why this incident happened, but it went into Libya and was shot at.
Yeah, so we had some folks actually with, it looks like from the picture that I can see, it looks like shoulder-mounted RPGs or something along this line that they were actually firing upon the tanker with, and then they posted this to their Facebook page.
Yes, this is the Libyan Marine Special Forces, so the military of Libya, government organization, fired at this vessel with RPGs, and you're right, posted to their Facebook page. They're obviously proud of their attack on a commercial vessel.
Wow. So there's some Libyan army pride. Do we know if this was authorized by the Libyan government at all, or if it was maybe a rogue incident here?
We don't have details. You'll have to stay tuned as we explore and investigate this story in more depth. We do know that the company has been in financial trouble recently, and this vessel was stuck in the Suez Canal for 6 months earlier this year. The crew wasn't being paid, and the owner was not paying its bills. So this company is trying these risky maneuvers, but they're in some financial trouble over these expenditures. It's not cheap to cut six giant holes in a vessel.
In a nice new ship, yeah.
I would imagine that they plugged them up after the failed attempt to skim. But the bottom line here is this company is in financial trouble because it's taking these risks. And you can debate, you know, wait, on one hand, we need companies that are willing to take risks to try new things because that's how we innovate. But also it can lead to unintended consequences.
Yes.
And yeah. I don't think anyone intended the Libyan government to fire upon a commercial ship with RPGs. And more surprising is the fact that they proudly posted to Facebook.
Yes. Well, and I got to hand it to G-Captain because this is some good reporting on G-Captain's part here. Because I'll tell you, I read the paper every morning. I don't watch television or cable news too much because it's hard to stomach. There's not too much reporting that goes on there, in my opinion. But I do read the newspaper every morning and stay abreast of the news pretty well. And I hadn't heard a peep out of this. You would think that something like that would have the potential to be almost an international incident. But so far, the only reporting that I see is here on G-Captain. There's some video there as well. I think there's a link there to the Facebook page. I'm not sure. But listeners, I encourage you to check that out on gcaptain.com. Very interesting story. Anything else before we move on, John?
No, that's like you said, we're gonna follow up on this story and as we explore more facts.
Good deal. So the Costa Concordia, we've spoken about the Costa Concordia before as well, and this is something that is in the salvage stages right now. So we've got a salvage operation going on, and let's see, the uprighting. Well, tell us about this. You used the word parbuckling, which was, I've probably heard it before, but I'd forgotten what it was. So talk to me about the Costa Concordia and parbuckling.
We won't get into the semantics of the word, mainly because I don't know much about it.
Yeah, but well, you can at least tell us what it means.
What they're basically doing is the Costa Concordia was the Italian cruise ship owned by Carnival Cruise Lines that ran into rocks off a small resort island in Italy, and people lost their lives, and it was a major disaster. The captain's on trial right now for abandoning the ship before the passengers were and making a series of bad command decisions.
And this was the cruise liner, wasn't it?
Correct.
Where people go on for pleasure cruises.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
And among the lost passengers was a small child, and a very sad story.
Yes.
But now you have this enormous, very expensive to build cruise ship that's sitting on the rocks, capsized, so it's laying down on one side, and it has to be righted and pulled off the beach.
Which is parbuckling, uprighting of the ship.
Correct.
All right.
So how do you do that? You could just pull it off, but you still have the holes in the bottom of the ship. Well, it float afterwards. And then as you pull it off, you know, if you attach the mechanisms to pull the vessel up high, it'll roll over and then it could capsize on the other side and start to sink right under you. So what they're doing is they built these enormous subsea platforms that are going to give extra stability to the vessels. They've taken these, they've floated them out there, they've welded them to the side of the vessel. So as they roll the vessel back upright and pull it from the rocks, it won't continue to roll over on the other side. And it will have enough intact stability to float to the location, which they haven't announced yet, where they will scrap this vessel and turn it into rebar and razor blades.
Okay, well.
And this is going to happen. This uprighting, the parbuckling of the vessel is set to happen in the beginning of first week in September. And G-Captain is in actually a little bit of a skirmish with Crowley, who owns the Titan Salvage, which is doing the salvage, because we said, you know, this is big news here, and this is not only interesting news that people want to see, and great publicity for the salvage company and everything, but as Master Mariner myself, I could learn from this operation there. How do they do this? How does it accomplish? And we can learn a lot of lessons from this, because it hasn't been a salvage of this size, hasn't been attempted. A parbuckling salvage of this size has not been attempted before. So there are a lot of lessons to learn. So we've been on the phone with Crowley and Titan trying to get them to get us video or time-lapse photos or anything of this salvage. They're pushing back a little bit. They, you know, for a good reason, if it goes wrong, they don't want public. But
right.
I think this is a real learning opportunity for the maritime community. And we're going to continue. Partner Mike Schuler was on the phone with Crowley all yesterday trying to rile them up and get them to send a video camera out there. And if they're unwilling to, we're also contacting some local videographers and photographers in the area. And we're trying our best now to get the video, because this is going to be a real interesting operation next week.
This does sound like a bit of a dilemma, too, with the dissemination of that information. In my mind, as you were saying that, I'm picturing some inflatables circling around the operation there when some guys with their handheld video cameras getting some video.
Well, there was a local kind of rogue video team a few months ago, which got these remote control helicopters attached to camera everyone, and they were zooming in and out of the Costa Concordia, and they got in a little bit of trouble for doing so, but nonetheless we're contacting them and saying, don't interrupt the salvage attempt, but
sure,
if you could use your helicopters and stay at a good distance and get video for us, so we'll see if it happens. But
very interesting.
I'm interested in seeing this firsthand, and I'm sure our listeners are as well.
Mm-hmm. And there are, I'm looking at G-Captain right now, there's some wonderful pictures, there's even some diagrams on this operation. It is very interesting from an educational standpoint as well. So hopefully they will provide access to it. And it's Crowley Maritime that owns Titan, did you say?
I believe it's Titan Salvage.
Titan is the salvage, okay. Yeah, so hopefully they will let us know what's going on so that we can continue.
They're not against, they're being very helpful in answering our questions, and it's not a matter of them trying to hide anything. It's really a matter of they're extremely busy there.
Right.
And they have a lot of last-minute tasks and don't want to have to worry about the video teams. So.
I can understand that from their perspective. I mean, they've got a job to do. Salvage operations, by their very nature, are a little bit messy and unpredictable, and you know, probably the last thing they want is a bunch of yahoos with cameras out there catching them, you know, in their worst moment. So I can understand that perspective.
Yeah, and we're not asking for a bunch of yahoos. We're just asking for one yahoo with a camera.
All right. So, well, maybe they will acquiesce.
We're hoping to negotiate with them.
So listeners, if there's anybody out there that has connections with a Titan or a Crowley, pass along the good word here from G Captain, and we'll do some responsible reporting on this end. Anything else with the Costa Concordia, John?
No, stay tuned.
Okay, an interesting story that continues to develop, so we will keep you posted on the progress of that salvage operation. The last thing we want to hit on today that is always an interesting subject to discuss is piracy. And, of course, in our minds, when we think about piracy and pirates, we go back to the old ages when Columbus sailed the seas and swashbuckling pirates with the skull and crossbones overtaking ships. But a lot of people, those of us in the maritime industry realize it, but a lot of people outside of the maritime industry don't realize that piracy is still alive and well in today's world, particularly off the coast of Africa, off the eastern coast of Africa, and now spreading to the western coast of Africa as well, as we've discussed on the show before. So, John, first off, before we kind of dig into this specific story, talk to us a little bit about piracy in the world. How is it that piracy can exist in the year 2013? We still have pirates out there doing pirate things. So just fill us in on that a little bit.
Well, the pirates have always existed, and actually, if you look at the operating procedures of the Navy, the reason the U.S. Navy is around, it's not to go attack foreign countries or support the Army. The primary mission of the Navy is to support the merchant marine, and mm-hmm. we can debate the U.S. flagships, and we can debate if they've been doing an effective job with a takeover of the Maersk Alabama and such like that. But that's the Navy's primary job, and you go all the way back to the pirates in Tripoli, and it's a long history. But then piracy for past 100 years has really been more about petty theft, and the biggest area is the Straits of Malacca, and pirates would come on and steal things from the vessel and then depart. Somali piracy is an entirely different ballgame. It really harks back to the old time piracy where an entire ship would be stolen and held for ransom. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it really started was as you ships that are transiting from Europe to the Middle East and to Asia, Europe is a very heavily regulated, heavily monitored area. There's no area of London you can walk around without being on a video camera. Mm-hmm. And it's true for ships, too, as they come from Europe and down through the Straits of Gibraltar, the Mediterranean, and the Suez are all heavily monitored area. And then you get into the Red Sea and near Somalia, and there's not much law enforcement. There's not much monitoring or anything else. And ships were disposing of chemicals and bilge oil and stuff there because it wasn't being monitored, and it killed a lot of the fisheries in the region. So it started off as fishermen angry at the ships for polluting and trying to provide for their family with a lower harvest because of these pollutants. A few fishermen decided they were angry enough to take a ship, but you can sort of justify they were feeding their family, but the problem was they did it successfully, and now other pirates say, hey, this is big money. And it was taken over by kind of the Somali version of the mafia. Mm-hmm. It's like a ground network of businessmen and pirates, and it's not them who are in danger. The actual pirates themselves are attacking the vessels or just 17, 18-year-old kids that are hired by these crime bosses.
So hired guns, basically.
Yeah, and I do have to put a little caveat in here that I am on the board of directors of Six Maritime, which I believe, I'm a little biased here, is the best maritime security outfit. So the solution to maritime piracy is we need to protect these ships with armed guards, and this is an organization that uses former special forces. It was founded by Paul Robinson, who was the SEAL, the head instructor at Buds Training SEALs, so one of the most respected Navy SEALs there. And these guys protect ships, so that's a little involvement I wanted to disclose. But there are smart ways to do it, and there are not so smart ways. Some of the maritime security companies just provide guys with very little training, very little experience with weapons. They may put one American Special Forces and then to direct a whole crew of guys who have no experience and might not speak English. So the best companies are doing, their whole force has experience in combat from a, not necessarily American, but maybe British, or experienced special forces operation. And this has proved very effective. So the success of Somali Pirates has dwindled. And now you're seeing some copycatting in the other side of Africa, mm-hmm. mainly Nigeria. Mm-hmm. But we're in this transition zone of conditions in Somalia are improving, but they're starting to sprout up in other places in the world, and we'll see if the problem grows elsewhere.
So you bring up several interesting points with that. One is, and just to recap for the listeners, this escalation of piracy that we've seen over the last decade, in particular, of ships actually being commandeered. I mean, these pirates are going on, they're taking the crew as hostage, they are commandeering the entire ship. They are stealing Correct. That ship and occupying that ship and not releasing that ship.
Correct.
So that's been a phenomenon over the last decade or so, and it's escalated in its frequency. The other interesting thing that you bring up is hired security versus naval forces, sovereign naval forces, protecting merchant fleets. Because as you mentioned, the United States Navy originally could be argued, one of their chief duties was to protect the merchant fleets so that they would be able to traverse the global waters safely. How do you reconcile the fact that commercial fleets are having to go out and hire, I don't want to call them mercenaries, but hiring private security companies to protect their fleets, their merchant ships, when we've got the Navy?
It's a damn big ocean, the Indian Ocean. And it's not a this or that solution. Mm-hmm. And that's what attracted me to this six maritime is board. I've been asked to be on the board of directors and a number of maritime companies. And this is the first I accepted because their solution isn't just to put weapons on ship. It's to coordinate with the Navy forces and let them and share the intelligence. So they have UAVs that take pictures of these pirates, and they share that with the Navy. The Navy is the first solution. The private security should be the second solution. But the ocean is too big for the Navy to watch every ship.
UAVs are unarmed vehicles, I would imagine. Does that stand for?
They're the remote control.
Remotes, okay. Yep.
Unmanned,
yeah.
Aerial vehicles. So you like the Maersk Alabama was attacked by pirates the day before it was successfully attacked, or the pirates actually took charge, and they called the Navy, but the Navy was far away. It took them an entire day to respond, mm-hmm. and there just is a large ocean. You call a Navy ship, and it's 600 miles away. Even if that Navy ship can do 30 knots, it's going to take a significant time for them to come to your rescue, and you need to protect yourself in the interim.
Let me ask you this, and I hate to put you in a position to speculate, but you know a lot more about the maritime law than I do. If there was a commercial ship out there and a United States naval vessel was close by, and if that merchant ship was under attack by pirates and that merchant ship put out a distress call to that naval vessel, would the naval vessel most likely respond?
Yes, and in areas where the traffic is more closely condensed, as they're going through the Red Sea, there are actual convoys. So okay. The naval vessel actually convoy these vessels, herd them together, and directly respond. And private security kind of steps back in those cases. But here we're talking vessels in the Indian Ocean. They're too widely dispersed and it would just be, there aren't enough Navy ships, and it would be too expensive to have individual convoys.
Right.
So it doesn't happen.
Okay, very interesting. So the story that's posted on gcaptain.com has the title, "The U.S.'s First Modern-Day Pirate Prosecutor to Step Down." So let's talk about that, John.
Yes, Neil McBride was a U.S. attorney for Virginia, and he was the first modern-day piracy prosecutor. In November 2010, he prosecuted five pirates for the failed attack of the USS Nichols, and then subsequently prosecuted the pirates for the failed attack of the USS Ashland. Now, the USS Nichols was a U.S. Navy frigate, and the Ashland was a LSD. And this goes to the question of the basic of intelligence of pirates that attack a Navy ship thinking it was a commercial vessel.
Right, because I was going to say, now these are some pretty gutsy pirates to actually go after a United States naval vessel, but apparently they didn't realize that these were U.S. naval vessels. They thought they were merchants that they were attacking.
Yeah, a minor mistake on their
part. Yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you what, as a proud mariner and a proud supporter of our U.S. Navy, I say... That's one for the good guys. I can only chuckle that they made that mistake, and I'm glad that they were prosecuted. And the interesting thing is that these convictions are apparently the first convictions that have been done in a long time.
Yeah, that's the real challenging thing about this. There was long established legal precedent for this, but it dates back, you know, over 100 years. So how do you take those longstanding precedents and kind of mesh them with modern legal practices? Now, all of our laws go after, you know, are based off longstanding precedents, but they've been updated continuously. These piracy laws haven't. So it was up to Neil McBride and his team to really bring these laws into the modern day. And that was a large job filled with political landmines and a lot of difficulty, but he was successful. He prosecuted these pirates, and he also has gotten 11 life sentences, and three pirates faced capital charges for the attack of the U.S. flagged private sailboat SV Quest. So this was a American family had this. They were missionaries on a sailboat, and they were attacked by pirates, and it was a very unfortunate event, but the Navy was able to capture these pirates and successfully prosecute them. And not only the pirates themselves, but Neil McBride was able to successfully prosecute the head piracy negotiator. So this is the middleman who actually works between the pirates and the money man collecting the checks, Mohammed Shibin, and he was given 12 consecutive life sentences for his job as the middleman. So you can keep it, you can keep prosecuting, and you can fire back, and there are all these things you can do about the pirates themselves. But going back to what I said earlier, they're 17, 18-year-old kids. If you want to really solve this problem, you have to get at the next level. And that was the major win for Neil McBride, is prosecuting this pirate negotiator, which he did successfully.
Very good. Very interesting. And the numbers are quite significant. I'm reading from the G-Captain site, and that under Mr. McBride's leadership, since 2010, he's convicted 26 pirates that were captured near Somalia. And these are the first piracy convictions in the United States in nearly 200 years. So I, for one, am very proud of Neil McBride and the legacy he is leaving behind, and for the good work that he has done. So, John, we are about out of time for this week. Any final thoughts with regard to the piracy issue? This is something that is very interesting to discuss, and of course, we'll come back to this periodically. But any final thoughts for this week?
The big question is, are we going to have copycat piracy in other places of the world? And there have already been examples off the coast of Nigeria, and time will tell if people in other third world nations that are suffering financially or organized crime in other regions of the world will begin attacking ships, because we've come up with successful measures in Somalia, but by allocating those resources there, if it expands other places in the globe, it's going to be a much more difficult problem. So that's the magic question right now.
Right, Right.
Will it expand past Somalia?
Right. And something that we'll need to keep a close eye on, and something that, again, G Captain is doing an excellent job of reporting on. Listeners, thank you for being with us this week. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. G Captain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.